thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
I got some.
Here's John Williams.
Potatoes here, and I don't think the bag is big enough. Hi, it's John. We're here till 3 and lots to do on the show today. Hoping you're having a good day and hope you had a good weekend. Lordy, Saturday could not have been worse. Sunday could not have been better. Here we are Monday, and the town is buzzing. President is in town. If you didn't hear, he spoke to an international association of police chiefs. You figured he would take some of the shots that he took at our city and our police chief, and he sure did. I think it's an interesting call for one Eddie Johnson, because thousands of Chicago police officers are on the line protecting the president today all around the city. So Eddie Johnson needs to show up. Now, he's going to give a talk at 1:30. What does show up mean? Maybe he should be, maybe he was, out on the streets with the men and women. But he wasn't going to show up and take that grief from the president. Eddie Johnson has stood his own ground more than once. Remember when Jussie Smollett was in the news and the president spoke about Jussie Smollett too and got some laughs? Actually, the president was kind of funny when he got some laughs on that one. But that's when, you remember Eddie Johnson, our police superintendent, stood up for the city of Chicago. So we're not going to put up with this crap from this punk. And I think a lot of us thought, oh, more of that, please. So that's the mindset of a man who decided also not to go and take it from Donald Trump. Again, he's going to get his turn at 1:30. We asked him to come on the show today. We asked Kim Fox to come on the show today. We asked Kwame Raoul to come on the show today because all of them were under the president's microscope. But they have declined our invitations. That's fair enough. So that was that. We'll talk a little bit more about here in just a minute. Teachers are still on strike. The Cubs have made official, I guess, David Ross is going to be the manager. I don't know if you heard that, Steve, while you were gone, but the Chicago Cubs have a new manager, and he used to catch for the team. Holy cow. So that's going to happen. The highlight of the weekend, by the way, for Brenda and me was we went to the Graceland Cemetery. It's near Grace and Waveland. So it was named Graceland Cemetery at Irving Park and Clark in Chicago. If you go to a Cubs game, maybe you find yourself driving around looking for a place to park, and you'll see that huge cemetery. It is a jewel in Chicago. It's just fantastic. And they give walking tours. We were on a walking tour of it for 2 hours yesterday. It's a level one arboretum, too. It is as pretty for the trees, the foliage, and the landscaping as it is the history. But the history is just amazing. Marshall Field is buried there. Daniel Burnham is buried there. Van der Rohe is buried there. Marshall Field is buried there. There's a Getty is buried there. Just the names nationally and in Chicago are amazing. Ernie Banks is buried there. Jack Johnson, the famous boxer who America wanted a great white hope to defeat back in the 1920s, is buried there. It's not an especially religious cemetery, but it is just gorgeous, and the history in that city is amazing. If you do nothing but just go for a walk there someday, you will thank me. It's at Irving and Clark. It's a couple blocks long, depending on where you're accessing it, but it's really wonderful. So that was part of our weekend. Okay, so a couple notes from the president's speech, by the way. Let's just start with the big news over the weekend. And that was that al-Baghdadi guy, the founder of ISIS, was captured. And the president wasted no time crowing about that in front of the police chiefs.
Al-Baghdadi. They've been looking for him for a long time. They've been looking for him for many years. He was a sick and depraved man, and now he's dead. He's dead. He's dead as a doornail. And he didn't die bravely either, I will tell you that. He should have been killed years ago. Another president should have gotten him.
The reaction from the crowd was kind of mystifying to me there. I mean, it was a great day for America. And I can see the police chiefs are maybe a little hardened to the reality of taking out somebody like that, maybe more than the rest of us. But it just got a bona fide laugh.
It's so funny. As you said that you were playing it, I was talking in here, that I was surprised by the dignity or the The lack of dignity may be in response. Yeah. Because, you know, these are police chiefs.
Well, and that's maybe it. If it was maybe any other crowd, right? But it's cops, and they're used to a side of the world that we're not used to.
That's certainly true, but they also are used to seeing the results of that side of the world. I don't know. It's just kind of funny, I think, when you're in a room and other people start laughing, you know, that laughter sort of is contagious.
Well, there's a little bit of that. There's no doubt that it was going to be his room anyway. It's the police chiefs. They invited him there. They knew what they were going to get. Here's what Trump gets wherever he goes, and that is a room that just wants to see the show, right? So sometimes you don't know what the reaction from a crowd is going to be or why the people are there, but I think a lot of the people are there at times because, you know, why are they responding so enthusiastically? The stuff he says isn't that hilarious, but what do you know? You are there witnessing it. It's a show, and I think part of the laughter is the almost acknowledgement, like, wow, he's doing it again.
So
here we go.
Like when Henny Youngman says, take my wife, please.
Exactly, and right? Then you go, oh, wow, look at that.
You've heard it before.
It's not all that funny. You've heard some of these lines before, if not that one per se. You knew he was going to get at Eddie Johnson, and he didn't waste much time after he did that. A short while later, he spent about 3 minutes talking about the police superintendent in Chicago. Elif, this is cut number two.
But there is one person that's not here today. We're in Chicago. I said, where is he? I want to talk to him. In fact, more than anyone else, this person should be here because maybe he could learn something. And that's the superintendent of Chicago Police, Eddie Johnson. A few days ago, Johnson said, quote, the values of the people of Chicago are more important than anything President Trump would have to say. I don't think so. Because that's a very insulting statement after all I've done for the police. And I've done more than any other president's ever done for the police.
That was cut number two. Eddie Johnson gets his turn at about 1:35 here on WGN. Okay, so then he couldn't resist. He had to do the Jussie Smollett story, too.
Then you have the case of this wise guy, Jussie Smollett, who beat up himself. And he said MAGA country did it, MAGA country. And it's a scam. It's a real big scam, just like the impeachment of your president is a scam.
Yeah, that got a big round of applause. President depicting the impeachment process of him, the hearings, as a scam. That got a big round of applause. If you're keeping score, I would say the Baghdadi remark got similar round of applause. When he said, no one's going to protect your Second Amendment like me, it did not get the round of applause that I thought I would. You know, I was watching some of his punchlines, but there is more proof that that was his room, that's for sure. So then you could not help but also notice, too, if you're following Twitter, that one of the things that he spent as much time on as anything else, and that Twitter in Chicago is very interested in, was his continual telling of the story of the police officer who said, I can fix this in one day.
But I'm going to tell you a quick story because it happened right here, and I was very impressed with a certain person, whoever that person may be.
And then he goes on to tell the story of a burly police officer who had the respect of his subordinates and was leading an escort of the president to his airplane. And Trump called him over and talked to him, and the guy said, Mr. President, we don't have any respect for the leadership of the Chicago Police Department or the people running this city. If we had that, we could fix it in one day. And journalists have sort of drilled down into when he was in town and where he was and who was escorting him at the time so that they've sort of got it circled around a limited number of potential people. I don't understand the interest in finding out who the police officer is. I've never taken this story as literal, although he tells it as a literal event. This actually happened. There was a police officer. But suppose we did find the cop who told the president we could fix it in one day. There's no one-day fix to crime in Chicago. So I guess that would be a sort of aha moment, right? So we found this guy, but I don't see the value. I don't understand the great interest that some people in this town seem to have in finding out who that specific person is. I mean, if that person doesn't exist and you've exposed the president for saying something that wasn't true, that's no great gotcha. And if he does exist, he doesn't have an answer to crime in Chicago for a one-day fix. So I'm not exactly sure the enthusiasm for that story. I think we have one more. LF, do we have one more? Is there a cut five on the president, too? It was just those four, huh? You wanted to say something on line one, John? You're on WGN Radio. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I have two comments, actually. My first comment is, you know, regardless of what side of the political aisle Eddie Johnson is on, you know, this was a conference of police chiefs from around the country. And, you know, if he wanted to walk outside during Trump's speech, that's fine. But he owed it to our city and to the police chiefs who came from all over the country to be there, to speak, to be a part of this. This wasn't a Trump rally. This was one speech given by the president. I think it's very disrespectful. I think it's embarrassing to our city. I think that, we have blood running in our streets every day. You know, so regardless of whether he agrees or not with Donald Trump, he owed it to all of us to be there and represent this city. I mean, that's my first comment, in my opinion. My second comment is, I don't understand how a police chief who got on the camera, I'm talking about Eddie Johnson, and lied to this city about... He told us it was a mix-up of his medications. That's why he was found slumped over the wheel of his vehicle. And then 48 hours later, recanted that story and said that he was drinking a few hours prior. I don't know how that police chief, only in Chicago, can that police chief keep his job.
Thanks for the phone call. Eddie Johnson admitted that he was drinking eventually. I don't know that he said he was drunk or that the alcohol per se is what was impairing him. It was, I thought, a combination of factors, the medicine he's on, his medical condition, and the alcohol. It's an embarrassing scene, that's for sure.
Yeah, I missed the drinking part. I was gone. I didn't see that part of the story.
Yeah.
But I will say, he was here on maybe that Tuesday or Wednesday before, and I ran into him in the hallway, and I came back in the newsroom and told the people here, I said, he doesn't look good. He did not, so I wasn't surprised at all to find out that that something happened to him two or three days later.
Yeah.
The other thing about Johnson, you know, and he threw the first punch on this, so he certainly should be expecting to get a counterpunch from President Trump. He knows how it works. But I don't know that just because he didn't go to the speech doesn't mean he didn't go to the conference.
He was at the rally.
Right.
Or he was out with the police officers. He was not in attendance at the audience.
Okay.
I just wonder what it would have been like. I mean, if I'm Eddie Johnson and I'm sitting there taking that, is the fact that my uniform is in the room, does that trump the fact that I'm just sitting here taking abuse from a president who's done nothing but abuse the city? So if I'm going to stand up for my city rather than be a patsy and sit here and take it, maybe I won't show up and I'll be out on the street with the cops. I mean, I suggest to you that that would be Eddie Johnson's mindset on that. But not everybody agrees. You heard the last call. Lots of texts about this.
Well, he's also going to have his news conference before the president is gone. So, you know, if that was the strategy to say, I'm going to be out with my officers protecting the entourage and all of that, he's speaking before that's over.
Well, if I had to make my pick, regardless of who the president is or the city is, I mean, where should the superintendent be? Sitting with the conventioners or out with his troops? I would say it should be out with the troops, right? I mean, that sends a signal as well. I'll tell you what. You cannot see something like this. And, you know, it could have been the World Series parade for the White Sox or the Cubs or the Blackhawks or the Bulls, you know, the championship rallies. Or it could be some big protest where violence might break out. You can't go to one of those things. And I've been to virtually all of them in this city because I work downtown and I walked by it today. I had to go around the streets and sand trucks, which were blocking off streets, and cops everywhere on bicycles, on horses, in squad cars, and paddy wagons, in boats on the river. You cannot go by that presence and not be impressed with or appreciative of what the police do, because it's so true and it's so obvious. But it doesn't hurt to just remind ourselves that if something goes south, these people are on their way to it while we're going the other direction. And you just see that and you want to thank these people. I almost came up to a couple of the cops, but they didn't seem to be interested in my pat on the back. They had their grim cop-looking faces on, so I just let them be. But the row of, for instance, cops on bicycles on Upper Wacker Drive is very long, and they're all paying attention, and they're just looking for something to go wrong. Very mobile and very on the scene downtown today. John, it's not funny. Don't excuse the police chief's laughing. It's nothing but concerning that the police chief's laughed when the president said that Baghdadi was as dead as a doornail. 708, kudos to Superintendent Johnson for standing up to Trump the bully. 224, I love Superintendent Johnson. It's back and forth on that. Hey, John, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
Hey, John. My thought is, to quote a famous movie, we got serious problems in this country. We have to come together. I mean, a president that, you know, comes to town just to poke fun or ridicule, we need, you know, federal and local forces coming together to solve the murder problem in the city. We got problems all over the country, mass shooting. Instead, it's become a political game. Let's just play the political game. I want to get reelected. Whatever happened to, you know what, actually performing as a president, getting things done, coming up with solutions, working together. That's the tragedy to me of Donald Trump, is that, you know what, he's become the president of the hard far right, and the rest of the country, I don't even show up in states that I'm not going to get. I think of California and the wildfires that are going on. And his comment a year or so ago was, oh, you know, it's their fault somehow that they didn't manage these fires. Instead of going, joining hands with local government, forgetting what party you're from, and coming up with solutions, that's the tragedy to me of Donald Trump.
Thank you for the phone call. By the way, Steve, I spoke to our old producer, Beth Swerk, who worked with Kathy and Judy and with me for years here at this radio station.
Yeah.
She left for Northern California a few years ago. She was talking to me over the weekend. They shut her power off this weekend, and she might get it back Wednesday.
Well, and they've been
24/7.
They've been shutting the power off to try to keep power lines from blowing over and causing fires.
Preemptively.
California utility Pacific Gas and Electric Power reports today, just a few minutes ago, in fact, that power lines may have caused two wildfires in the San Francisco area over the weekend.
Yeah, she's really ticked about that, too. So they just said, okay, we're not going to give you any electricity in case the lines go down. It could start another fire still. So no electricity until at least Wednesday. I said, what happened to the food in your refrigerator and freezer? She says, it's gone. She says, some of the local grocery stores completely wiped out. She says, mom and pop shops completely wiped out. No business because they don't have electricity. So she filled up. This is sort of like that. What was it? Night Gallery episode where if you just take away their energy, the people, or was it an Orson Welles thing? If you take away their power, then the people just go mad and kill themselves. But so she filled up her SUV with gas, and then she runs her car, and then she can charge her phone and her laptop, and then she can watch shows that she downloaded on her laptop or read a book on her laptop. She bought like an industrial flashlight. And she's sort of living that way. It's a first world problem, but that's the way she's living in Northern California this week and has been for a while. It's 1:35 on WGN Radio. Normally, at this part of the show, we play back something from a previous episode. But rather than do that, I'll play something from a previous episode of Saturday Night Live just because we haven't got to it. Chicago's been so on the national radar today. And on Saturday night, Chance the Rapper got a chance to rap about Chicago.
If you don't remember, last time I was here, I gave $1 million to Chicago Public Schools. And I'm happy to say it completely fixed everything. No, honestly, to the teachers in Chicago, I know you guys are on strike right now. I fully support you. I just wish that when I was in school, my teachers had gone on a strike. Like, for real, though. I'm going to do a song about Chicago, the second city. Okay, here we go. Now, I love Chicago, the city that fathered me, called the second city. But that doesn't bother me. I gotta tell you, I think it's the reverse. Cause sometimes the second best is better than the first. Sometimes the second best is better than the first. Like, I don't like Google, I use Bing. I like French fries from Burger King. When it comes to Harry Potter, people give me grief cause I prefer Percy Jackson Lightning Thief. I only drink Pepsi, never Coca-Cola. Jimmy Kimmel's fine, but I love Adam Carolla. And Robin Gibb, favorite BG. I hate Mario, love Luigi. Cause I'm the kind of guy that likes the second best better. I'm the kind of guy that likes the second best one. I like DMC better than Run. Cause I'm the kind of guy that likes the second best, son.
And on he went. It was
so
great.
Good.
He was so, you know, the thing is, we were just talking about this in the studio. Chance is the whole package. He's a good host. He's a good entertainer, singer, rapper, whatever. And then he's good on the skits. I mean, he just, a lot of people were texting last night and tweeting about how just funny Chance was.
He is. And I love that they reprived his role as a kind of sports reporter, except for this time they threw him into something he's not familiar with, but it was esports.
Yeah.
Before he did the hockey thing. And just so funny.
I couldn't agree with you more. That was inspired. The thing where he was the judge.
Yeah.
A sort of people's court like thing, the 10-second first impression judge. Props to you, Chance. And we'll play a little more of him a little later on. It's just because Chicago, as I said at the beginning of the show, is just so buzzing today. The president is down. The teachers are still striking. There's this international convention of police chiefs here. And there's also a convention of architects. In our studio is William Baker. He is the structural engineering partner at Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill. And we're talking about skyscrapers and some of their new features. The convention is the CTBUH 2019 10th World Congress. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Very good. Glad to be here.
What do all of those letters stand for?
The Council on Tall Buildings and Urban Habitat. It was founded 50 years ago, so this is the 50th anniversary. It was founded right when the Hancock was being finished by one of my predecessors. Foz Khan was one of the founders. And people, new tall buildings were just coming in, and people needed to talk about how to do it.
Do you remember the controversy about the Hancock when it first went up?
No, I'm from Missouri, but I remember driving by it when I was young, driving down Lakeshore Drive and seeing this incredible building on the skyline.
Well, I can't tell you anything about architecture and engineering, but my recollection is that people didn't like looks of it.
I've heard that.
Forget about the engineering, just the aesthetic. They went, the bones are on the outside, it's black steel, can't you hide some of that stuff? And now, of course, we've come to love it. It's iconic.
A few years ago, remember all the states had their own quarters?
Yeah.
And the Illinois quarter had two images you could recognize. Abraham Lincoln and the Hancock.
So I guess we've come around to accept that that's not such a bad thing.
Yeah.
Chicago is known as a city of tall buildings. Is it the birthplace of the modern skyscraper in this country?
That's one of the debates that's going to be happening at the council this week, is who was the very first skyscraper. But generally, it's been up to now, it's been accepted. It was the Home Insurance Building here in the center of Chicago. But actually, not only that event, but the modern tall buildings was invented here in Chicago, basically at IIT, in a one-story building called Crown Hall. There was a couple of partners from SOM, Myron Goldsmith and Foster Khan, were working with the students down there and developing these ideas. Eventually became, you know, the Hancock and the Sears and other buildings around the world.
And is the novelty that you build a superstructure of steel and then you fill in all the places rather than weight building upon itself story by story?
No, you still build it in that mostly story by story, not always. When we did the Burj Khalifa, we built it a little bit different. But basically, it used to be, if you go back to the Empire State Building, you had a lot of columns on the inside. You had just very short spans, lots of columns. And so the idea, can you take this structure and put it on the outside where it's most efficient, or concentrate in the middle where it can be useful, and by doing that you make a much more efficient and affordable building. The Hancock actually costs about the same as a building half its tall using the conventional technology, which is how they were able to sell the project.
Listen to you, name dropper, the Burj Khalifa, which we also did. Still the tallest building in the world.
Still the world's tallest. But it's going to have its 10th anniversary on January 4th. I remember going to Dubai for the opening, and I remember watching the fireworks go off of it. And I thought, this is not a good idea.
But why? Why?
Well, you think about fireworks coming off your building, it makes you a little hesitant. But you might remember the height of the building was a big secret. And so I was sitting there in the crowd feeling very smug because I knew how tall it was. And then what I didn't know is they changed the name of it. They call it, because up until that day, it was called the Burj Dubai. And the day it opened, it became the Burj Khalifa. And I was sitting next to a gentleman. I said, okay, who's Khalifa? Turns out he's the sheikh in charge of Abu Dhabi. And so that's how it became the Burj Khalifa.
Got it. How tall is that building?
About a half mile.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it's 828 meters.
Are buildings going to get taller? Can they go taller?
Yes, they can go a lot taller.
Really?
Yes.
And I wonder if they could, should they, or is there any practical purpose to it? Because you still got to get up there.
You got to get up there, and that's certainly one of the issues. But a super tall building has a certain purpose beyond just real estate. It's a marker. It's like you might say the Eiffel Tower is a silly way to make a restaurant, okay? But, you know, it's a marker. It tells you, you look at that, you know you're looking at Paris, you know you're looking at France, you know you're looking at Europe. And like the Hancock, you recognize that you see it up there on North Michigan Avenue, and you see, and it actually made a center. It made North Michigan Avenue what it is today by being this focal point of the development.
It pulls you away from the loop a little bit, and
yep.
So it makes the whole Mag Mile maybe more relevant. It draws the city north.
Well, you know, and here we are in the prairie, right? And so we have to make our own mountain ranges. So it's the mountain ranges, and, you know, there's the peak of the Sears, and there's the peak of the Hancock, and then 401 North Wabash there in the middle.
Tell me something about the Burj Khalifa that I don't know. I mean, I know it's real tall.
Yep.
I've seen the shots where, is that the one where Tiger Woods shoots a goal, or they play tennis matches mm-hmm. on the top?
No, that was a different one. This is the one that Tom Cruise jumped out the window on. That's the one.
So other than its height, what else is impressive or curious about that building?
Well, you actually go through a climate change as you go up. It's so high. Think about it. You go to Vancouver, and you're down there in the valley, and you have a certain weather, and you look up on the mountains, and they're skiing. And so I remember going to Dubai in the middle of the summer, like July. It's very, very hot and very, very humid because you're right there in the Gulf. And I remember going, and we'd go up on the outside of the building in these man hoists, because it was under construction. And when we were up about 50 stories, you could feel a little bit different. And when you got up to 160 stories above the ground, it was pleasant. You went through that much of a climate change going high.
160 stories?
160 up to.
And Hancock and Sears are about 100 stories.
Yeah, right? Hancock is 100 and Sears is 110.
110.
Yeah, Willis.
160.
Yep.
So will buildings get taller than they are now?
They probably will. I hope so.
For the reason you mentioned, somebody just putting their sort of...
You know, a skyscraper is a vote of optimism. You know, it's somebody who really thinking of the future and what they want to do, but and make it a mark. And you think about what New York City must have been like in the 20s, when all those skyscrapers were sprouting up one after the other.
What's your responsibility in these buildings? What do you do?
I'm a structural engineer, so I work with the architectural team and the other disciplines on figuring out how to do it. And you talked about the Hancock earlier. When you described it, you described both the architecture and the structure at the same time. And so what our goal is to have a design that's so integrated that you don't separate it. You don't pull the skin off the thing and the architecture disappears. You know, that it's so, it has such integrity that the structure and the architecture are one.
Buildings that maybe you all have done at Skidmore, Owings & Merrill, or maybe that you all haven't done. What are some of your favorite buildings in Chicago?
Well, I have to, of course, the Hancock is my favorite, you know, but there's also some very nice ones.
Did you guys build the Trump Tower?
We did the Trump Tower.
What a gorgeous building.
Yeah.
I mean, forget about the controversy about the man for a moment. You must be pleased with that, right?
No, it's nice. You know, it's nice to go up there. And I have some friends who have some apartments up there, so it's nice, the incredible views. And what's great is when you're above the clouds, you know, or
in the clouds.
Or in the clouds, yeah.
Yeah, what else do you like in the city?
Well, there's a little building right behind the Meese buildings. Well, I love the Meese buildings, by the way, called Chestnut DeWitt, which was actually the world's first tubular building.
First what building?
Tubular, where you have a... you can imagine if you had a tube like a paper cup, it's pretty solid. Now, if you punch holes in the paper cup, as long as the holes aren't too big, it'll still act like a tube. And so that was a huge breakthrough in technology that was done at IIT. And so that building was the very first tubular building. And
the all these other buildings. What's the purpose of the holes in the tube?
For windows. so you can see outside, so you don't have a solid outside. But that led to the World Trade Center buildings in New York. It led to, in some ways, the Hancock, which is a little bit different, and also led to the Sears Tower. That little building over there, that little 42-story building, it was the first one of that.
The Tall Buildings World Congress is in Chicago this week. People like William Baker from Skidmore, Owings & Merrill from Chicago are in town. They're convening about a number of issues. I thought I read once, though, that the problem with going higher than a half a mile, say Burj or anything else, is that people got to get up there, and that human beings can only be in an elevator going so fast, and you don't want to take too long to get there, et cetera. So talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, that is one of the issues, is how quickly you can get up there and how patient people will be. When we were doing the Burj Khalifa, the tallest elevator in the world was half a kilometer, and so that's the longest elevator that we had. But nowadays they can go much higher using what they're called Kevlar cables, you know, the very high-tech stuff. So they can go even higher. There's also some technology out there called Multi, where you can actually have an elevator that can go up and actually go sideways and snake around, so you can have multiple elevators in one shaft. So that you can, you know, it's almost like these self-driving cars.
How long does it take to get to the top of the Burj?
It takes about 3 minutes.
Okay, that sounds like a long time to me. But
well, you have to change elevators on the way up.
Got it. Do you worry about that? I mean, so as an engineer, maybe the architect thinks about this too. Maybe people freak out if they're in an elevator too long, or maybe they get dizzy if it's going too fast.
Well, actually, you know, the modern elevators are very, very smooth. Sometimes you don't even know they're moving. And of course, they always put in the advertisement, the screens, you know, so there's always stuff to keep people entertained these days. I remember when we first did the observation deck elevator for the Burj Khalifa, they had so much electronics in there that they were actually getting feedback. It was becoming a problem because they had so many screens and so much information going.
Okay, so let me just give you some other things that you people must think about. Sway. If a building gets too tall, I mean, aren't you testing or tempting the materials?
Well, you know, I mean, movement in the wind is one of the dominant things in tall buildings, and that's one of the things we spend a lot. We actually have a wind tunnel in our office down here on South Michigan Avenue where we do preliminary testing.
We do, too. It's called Steve Cochran. That's just a windy joke. So keep going. So what does your wind tunnel in your office do?
Well, it helps you predict how much it will move. And what you care about is not how much you move, but how quickly you move, or even more importantly, how quickly you change direction. And so if you're moving in one direction, you're okay. Like you're in an airplane and you're
it's
going...
springing back.
Yeah, if you're going in an airplane and you're just cruising, you don't notice. It's the starting and stopping that you feel. And so that's what we work about. There's actually...
Okay, but there must be a limit though, right? I mean,
yes.
A building can only sway so far.
Yeah.
And you've got some fancy calculation that'll tell you how far a building can go and what the stress levels are of the materials.
Yes.
And you double-check that information,
oh,
right?
Oh, triple-check.
I mean, this is the sort of thing that would keep me awake at night. I'm not kidding you.
But we do try to control the motion. It's funny. One time I went to at St. John's, Newfoundland, okay, to a moving room experiment, okay, because you know there they do a lot of stuff with training ship's captains. So they have this like a, almost like a flight simulator, but for ship's captains. So there's this room that rocks all around, so you can sail a ship in a storm. So we went out there to see how much it would be like to be in a tall building during a movement.
So, good idea.
So we got in this room and then sat down there and then turned on the motions and see whether or not it was objectionable or not.
One of our listeners had a question about that. Hey, Vicki, you're on WGN. What was your question? Hi.
And I think you kind of answered it. I had read once before where when the buildings get to be a certain height, they start putting those hallways that are open from one side to the other that help keeping the buildings from swaying.
Oh, yeah, so the wind kind of blows through there.
Well, that's what they did on the Vista Tower here, the ones that's under construction. You might notice, you know, it's very close to where we are right now, that there's some floors that are missing, and they did that to let the wind blow through. But they you can also have something called dampers, which are devices. You know how on a car, if you have shock absorbers, you hit a bump and the bump goes away? If your shock absorbers are out of date, you hit a bump, the bump keeps going. And so there are devices you can put in buildings to mitigate some of the motions also if you need to.
And then there's also a thing where they have a giant tank of water. I think they do this in the Aqua building next door to ours, or a giant sort of pendulum to sort of counterbalance the sway.
So as the building's swinging to the left, the pendulum swings to the right, and they try to cancel each out a bit.
Thanks for the call, Vicky. It's a good question. A lot of lost real estate. Blair Kamen pointed out in his article in the Tribune not that long ago that when you give up a floor for sway mitigation, you're compromising millions of dollars in rents. But what are you going to do?
Yeah, I would just say that's a fairly unusual solution they did there. A lot of times we will do some venting, but mainly on the mechanical floors where you don't need the whole floor anyway and let the wind blow through.
Okay, so answer me this. We'll take a break, come back with Bill Baker. He's the structural engineer partner at Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill. Here in town, they've got this World Congress of Smart, Fearless People called the CTBUH 2019 World Congress, which stands for the Congress.
The Council on Tall Buildings and Urban Habitat.
What about the industry you're in is most exciting to you right now after this? This council or Congress on Tall Buildings is in Chicago this week. You know that the Convention of Police Chiefs is in Chicago, but so too are the people that are into tall buildings. And in our studio right now is Bill Baker. He's the structural engineering partner at Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill. Just before the break, I asked you, what's exciting to you in your field about tall buildings?
Well, the biggest thing we're trying to do now has to do with sustainability. You know, we have a huge problem in front of us. The urbanization of the world, the huge population growth. What can we do to decrease our carbon footprint? A lot of that has to do with urban density and tall buildings, mass transit, people who can walk to work, can walk to shopping, stuff. And so the tall building is a very, very central part of this whole thing.
It's ironic, isn't it? People don't think of big cities as being environmentally friendly, but actually the most efficient way to live for a population.
No, the lowest carbon footprint areas in the United States are the cities.
You know, you imagine it's somebody out in the prairie, but then they got to drive a long way to get gas groceries.
I grew up in a small town, and nobody walks anywhere. You drive, because even if you can walk to one place, you have to drive to the next.
Are you interested in the debate sometimes about whose building is the tallest and how you keep score on that?
Yeah, that's a big player in the industry. You know, everyone wants the bragging rights and the tallest timber building, the tallest building ever, the tallest residential building, the tallest steel building. So yeah, there's a lot of bragging rights out there.
Well, give me in Chicago, it's Sears is one, right?
Yes.
Hancock is two, or Trump is two.
Is it Amoco or
Amoco? Yeah. Aon. Aqua is going to be in there, I think, for habitable space.
It might be Trump.
I'm glad that you're not 100% clear on this either.
Well, we got so many. I mean, we've had multiple buildings in the world's tallest list, you know. I think we have one just opened a week ago. It's going to be the eighth tallest building in the world in China. So the list is changing constantly.
William Baker, you have to visit with us again. You're fascinating. Congratulations on the success of you and your firm, and do visit with us in the studio again.
Okay, I'd like to.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have
all day long.
Here's John Williams.
And it's only 2:06. This is John. It's been a busy day, busy weekend, and a busy show here in Chicago. Thanks for tuning in. We're here till 3, then Rokan and Anna DeVlantis continue. You will not, though. I'm looking over my shoulder on the Illinois Avenue. Oh, actually, I think I see. There they go. The president is, as I speak, just now driving away from Trump Tower and towards Lakeshore Drive. So southbound, for instance, Columbus Avenue is closed off and has been for a while. The president's schedule has run long, so streets have just been sitting closed north and south, and some east-west in Chicago. That's actually an east-west street that I'm looking at. The caravan is, as we speak, speeding towards Lakeshore Drive. If you're stopped waiting to go south, the president's going to make a right-hand turn and head down that way.
So if you're on Lakeshore Drive, you might be swearing a little bit, but if you take the Kennedy home, you'll be happy to hear that he's flying from McCormick Place. Someone's got to be inconvenienced.
So he's going from McCormick Place.
He's
going
to copter back to the hut to O'Hare.
And then, okay, so Kennedy won't be tied up. Then he'll fly from O'Hare to his next stop, next destination. Yeah, so all of that's about to start to breathe a little better, probably.
And, you know, it's President of the United States, which is what you need to do.
Oh, for sure. It's no consolation, I suppose, to somebody who's been waiting for a long time for the roads to clear up. But downtown is going to start to flow again in minutes. It's 2:08. on WGN Radio. Just happened to look over my shoulder as that was going on. By the way, our news click at WGNRadio.com was going to be about the World Series game last night. Your show, Steve, not your show, but I know part of your routine is to watch Morning Joe. They're no friend of the president of late.
Yeah.
And yet there they were, Joe Scarborough and company, and they were saying that it was wrong for the fans to chant "lock him up" and boo the president.
I wasn't listening today. I didn't hear that.
That's the office of the presidency of the United States, and we're citizens. So let's not show the world us jeering the man that we have duly elected. That's what they were saying, and that's the way that rhetoric goes. The other side, of course, is it's free speech. And just as sure as the president can sit in a suite at the World Series game, I have a right to stand and boo. And boy, did they. The president did not throw out the first pitch, but they took time during a military salute to say, and now we also want to welcome the commander-in-chief. And they cut to the president and first lady up there. And it was loud. In fact, Elif, if you've got one and two, let's just get that up and out of the way here. This is cut one, and this is part of the president's greeting last night in Washington, D.C. You get the idea, and it went on like that for a little while. The videos that are being posted by the networks and by individuals, say on YouTube, vary. Some of them are louder than others. It depends on where, I guess, that person was in the crowd. But the one that I think is most ironic or most haunting to the president is this one. The president's expression changed when he realized what was happening out there, but he could not have been surprised. Lori Lightfoot might get booed in this town right now if she was throwing out the first pitch at Wrigley Field. That's just the peril of elected officials.
Well, so what was the what? So I'm surprised by the I don't even know who said it on MSNBC, but that they shouldn't boo or say things like that. I'm surprised that was a reaction.
Why? Because that's a liberal network, and
no, because I mean, politicians are, whether they're popular or unpopular, they're almost always booed.
Yeah,
and that's just part of it. And in this case, I mean, I think that, I mean, with where we are at this moment right now, the president being investigated and perhaps impeached, for them to turn that phrase on him, I think that's a, you know, not an insignificant moment.
Not an insignificant moment, but is it the right thing to do was the question. And there is a debate out there about that, Steve.
Yeah, well, obviously. Yeah, I'm just surprised they took it.
Oh, the stand that they took on that.
I mean,
show.
I don't like it when politicians are just automatically booed for being there.
Yeah.
But I don't, I mean,
I'm trying to think
you should be able to do it.
I'm trying to think of the last time, you know, a mayor, governors are forever, to me, getting jeered. When Jim Thompson spoke at my college graduation, he said, and in closing, and the place went bananas. They just couldn't wait to get him out of there. The students started to applaud, and I thought, if I ever get elected, I'm not going to throw out a first pitch.
Didn't governors get booed at the Hawks rallies? It seems to me I remember that.
Yeah, that's right.
Or maybe the Cubs rally. What was the Cubs rally? Was that?
Yeah. I mean, maybe in part it's also because this isn't about you, so get out of the way. Anyway, that's the way that went down. So the news click is either going to be, was Eddie Johnson right to not attend the convention, or was the crowd wrong to boo the president?
I mean,
you'll get a chance to vote on one of those.
Okay, but think of this. Think if in 20 years from now, Donald Trump was removed from office. I mean, I don't see that happening, but perhaps it will. 25 years from now, when you're writing the book or putting together the documentary, you're going to use footage of when he went to a baseball game and the crowd, which was not Democrat or Republican, started chanting, "lock him up."
They pointed out that Washington...
I doubt that any Republicans were in the chant there, but I mean, it wasn't a Democratic crowd necessarily.
It's a Democratic city, for sure. It's Washington, D.C., but I was thinking, who goes to a World Series game? It's high rollers.
Right.
And it's people from, you know, Houston and maybe the Washington metropolitan area. That means Virginia. And that means people who might not necessarily be Democrats or liberals. The news click will be about that. Like me on Facebook, I'm WGN King John. Now, the president was speaking to this International Convention of Police Chiefs. And so they've got over at McCormick Place the convention set up, right? And one of the groups that's there is Abbott Labs in the Chicago area. And in our studio is Fred Delfino, Abbott Senior Law Enforcement Liaison. Or is it liaison? Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you, John.
Yeah, nice to have you here. So Abbott's got a booth over there. Is that right?
Yes, we have a booth over in the exhibit hall displaying the Sotoxa oral fluid drug testing system.
I know a little bit about that. When Carol Stream started to test it, they came into our studio without the gadget, but we talked about it. You brought the gadget here for us. It looks like an old bag cell phone. It's about the size of something you could carry over your shoulder or a police officer could easily step out of the squad car with. And come up to somebody. It's a handheld device, right?
Yes, we designed it to be handheld for the convenience of the officer. You see, it's contoured towards so it can sit in the palm of your hand.
It looks like a big old
cell
phone or cordless phone. It's that small, if you will. What is it? What does it do?
It'll allow the officer roadside, closest proximity to the traffic incident, to be able to test a driver for six different drugs. So they could test for amphetamine, methamphetamine, benzodiazepines, cocaine, morphine, or marijuana, and have a result for each individual drug in just 5 minutes.
How does it work?
So a quick collection process with an oral swab, which is on a wand, as you can see. And
so when I'm pulled over, the cop sees I'm driving impaired, maybe. He gets this cotton swab wandy thing and just scrapes the inside of my cheek?
He just put it on the tongue, collects some oral fluid. There's an indicator
fluid.
Correct.
So he's getting some saliva.
Yes. It allows the officer, there's an indicator on here that turns blue. It allows the officer to know we collect enough sample. It goes into the instrument where the cartridge is already housed, and then it begins counting down from 5 minutes. So in just what normally would take days or weeks to get a lab result is now brought to closest proximity to traffic stop, allows law enforcement to make a critical decision right then and there.
What will it display? What will it tell me?
So it's going to put out a result that's going to say positive or negative for each one of the test drugs.
It doesn't say percentage of or body weight percentage. I mean, it's just an up and down?
Just positive, negative. It's a drug screen. So much like any drug testing product, it's going to, this is your screening device, followed up with a confirmation test.
So if I had used heroin or cocaine, and there were trace elements of that still within me, then it would pick that up?
At a certain level that the tests are designed for instance, THC is at a 25 nanogram cutoff, so anything there above is going to indicate positive for marijuana.
That's kind of critical, I suppose, right? Suppose I used cocaine a year ago or marijuana 2 weeks ago, and you detect that, it doesn't mean that I'm driving poorly as a result. Right?
Correct. So, you know, Abbott's a healthcare technology company. So we develop Sotoxa to test at certain levels. We don't want to have to worry about a use that is historical use, which is what you would see in a urine test, for example, or a hair test. Oral fluid allows you to get most recent use. It's only in the oral fluid sample for so many hours after use. You're not picking up weeks ago or days ago of marijuana or cocaine use.
So if it tests positive, then that means that drug impaired my driving?
So we're not telling you you're impaired. What the officer knows that you've recently used that drug. Impairment is going to come by a determination from the officer between a field sobriety test or a drug recognition expert's evaluation of you. So drug recognition experts are out there. It's a large group in law enforcement. They're extensively trained for hours, very expensive to train them. And they're trained to be able to put you through a 12-step process and pretty much identify the exact drug class that you're on. So that combined with Sotoxa will help them lead to an impairment decision. Again, this is screening device roadside to allow them, and even with an untrained officer, to know that you've recently used that drug.
So it doesn't convict me?
No, it doesn't.
It's a test to see if there's some of that there. I suppose then it would still be up to maybe a judge and a jury, if I were to fight it, saying, okay, you tested me for that, but I wasn't impaired. And it sounds like that's a judgment call that you're not getting involved in here.
All we're doing is collaborating with whatever's being seen roadside and the observations by the officer, providing them with a toxicology result, drug screening result for those six different drugs. And that's really what the role of Sotoxa is on the roadside, and then they could do a confirmation test via blood or oral fluid at a laboratory, and that's what they would typically go to court with.
Doesn't test for alcohol?
No, it does not. It's very specific for drugs.
Yeah. And how accurate is it? Are there any false positives?
It's greater than 90% accurate, and that's why we do confirmation tests, because with some drugs, there's always the risk of cross-reactivity, and that's why you do a confirmation. Marijuana is very specific for Delta 9. We're looking for the psychoactive component of marijuana, which is Delta 9, and commonly referred to as the parent drug. That's what causes the impairment in a driver.
So what's going to happen January 1st? Suppose you guys had these devices on the street in January 2nd, or after midnight on January 1st, people will be legally driving with marijuana in their system. So they're not breaking the law that they have some THC in them, right? They're not breaking the law after the 1st of January if I have some THC. Depends on the level, depends on if I'm impaired, da-da-da-da-da. But I mean, if you pulled me over after the 1st of January and you could prove that I've used marijuana, that doesn't mean I'm driving illegally, right? Illegal driving would be driving while impaired. And so now it's a question of, am I impaired or not, right?
Correct.
So what would the value then of this test be? Because if you test me positive for cocaine, it looks to me like I broke the law. If you test me positive for heroin, I broke the law. If you test me positive for marijuana, maybe I didn't break the law. So what are they going to do with the results then of your test?
So, John, first of all, I want to thank you for bringing up the other drugs because everyone focuses just on THC. So toxic tests for six different drug classes. And a lot of people seem to forget that there's been an opiate epidemic in the country. Other drugs, cocaine is making a comeback in some cities. So it's really important we're looking for multiple drugs as opposed to just marijuana. So what Cetox is going to do is it's going to allow the officer to be able to identify the drivers recently used. So, we're not going to say impairment. Now, maybe it's not a drug recognition expert who's doing the test, but it would allow an untrained officer to bring one in to further examine that driver to make the determination of impairment.
Right. So at least now you know what to look for. In other words, maybe I'm impaired, maybe I'm not. I've legally used marijuana. I test positive on your device. Now they're going to give me either a field sobriety test of sorts. Isn't that what they would do?
Yes. They would run you through a field sobriety test or they would run you through a DRE evaluation. That's going to be determined by the officer and the police department, what resources are available at the time of the stop to go for. So where the test falls in that process is typically after they've run you through those standardized field sobriety tests or the drug recognition expert evaluation.
My number is 312-981-7200 from Abbott Labs. Fred Delfino is here. He's the senior law enforcement liaison. He's the guy that was over at McCormick Place, and they are demonstrating this device, handheld, to police chiefs all around the country. You know, the president was in town talking to the cops. You heard that here on WGN. This is what's going on the convention floor. Somebody said, what if I kiss somebody who had used one of these substances? Will I test positive as a result?
Great question, but no, you would not test positive. So again, there has to be a certain amount of drug in the system active in order to be able to be detected. So it diffuses through your blood, through your blood into your oral fluid. Your oral fluid refreshes every 10 minutes. So kissing somebody, or even, great example, passive inhaling, right? So you're in an environment where maybe other folks are smoking marijuana. The level is set to where you're not going to get test positive for passively inhaling marijuana. So the oral fluid technology that Abbott has developed rules out the ability to passively inhale and test positive.
This device you all have invented is called Sotaxa?
Correct.
S-O-T-A-X-A?
S-O-T-O-X-A. Sotaxa.
Sotaxa. And are other countries using that, or are other states using that?
So Michigan, in terms of states, is the closest state, and they have deployed over 100 Sotaxa units throughout the state through Michigan State Police. They're in the second year of their pilot project. Year one was very successful in five counties. They expanded it October 1st statewide. They're using Sotaxa. Canada has also recently approved the Sotaxa instrument. The Drugs and Driving Committee has approved it. It's gone through their standards and passed the standards test. And the Attorney General of Canada in July has approved it as an approved drug testing device.
Fred, our listeners have a lot of questions about this, ones you, I think, know the answers to. Fred Delfino's here from Abbott Labs in, I say in Chicago, but actually the guys are headquartered in
Lake Forest.
Lake Forest. And they're at the Police Chiefs Convention in Chicago at McCormick Place. They're showing off the Sotaxa device, a handheld instrument that police officers will be able to use to test whether or not you've used, what are the substances again that it tests for?
Amphetamine, methamphetamine, benzodiazepine, cocaine, marijuana, and morphine, which would be a heroin.
I see. And marijuana, too. Maybe you said that, but...
Yes, marijuana, specifically Delta-9, which is the parent compound.
Bunny's on line one. You're on WGN. What was your question? Hi.
Hi. So I just have a question about one of the categories that you mentioned was benzos. So I have a rare neuromuscular disease called Isaac syndrome, and I'm prescribed Valium as a to help with the muscle spasms, and I'm prescribed it 4 times a day. I'm fully functioning. I'm not doped up, but I would definitely register as positive. So what about cases like that?
So it would really depend on the dosage levels that you're taking, but Valium should not be cross-reacting with our benzo test.
I guess, suppose though it did. I mean, I think what's also important for all of us to know is that you could flunk, you could test positive for all of the elements that your device is looking for. It doesn't convict you, right?
Correct.
I mean, so then before a judge or a jury or an attorney, you say, well, here's my rationale.
You'd have to have
what was my behavior behind the wheel? I mean, I don't think those are small points.
No, so it's a cumulative decision, right? So it starts from when the officer pulls you over. There's a reason why he's pulling you over. It's not just because he likes the color of your car. So you have erratic driving, there's a crash, whatever the reason might be. Then they're going through a series of steps while they're speaking with you. But what's really important to know is that, you know, we're doing a drug screen. If you're positive, there's still a confirmation test that's following it. And that confirmation test is what's going to rule out cross-reacting drugs, and it's going to be at a different level than what we're testing for.
And that
on the
confirmation
street.
Test is one that somebody like her would be subject to now anyway, right?
Second test is very specific for that drug that screens positive.
Bunny, good luck. Thanks for the call. Bill, you're on WGN. What did you want to say?
I was just wondering, you said it, I believe you said the threshold for the Delta 9 was 20 nanograms, and I was just wondering if it tests positive for that, how recently does it determine you've been using marijuana?
Yeah, what's the time lag?
So the cutoff is actually 25 nanograms, and it can detect it up to several hours after use. So there's always factors that determine how much is in your system. It's not like alcohol. You can't attach a number to X amount of beers, right?
Okay, so I'm a little confused by that answer. Several hours. 24 hours?
Oh, no. You're looking, it's still detectable in your oral fluid anywhere from 2 to 3 hours.
I see. So if I had smoked marijuana or had an edible, whatever, say 8 hours ago, would your device notice that?
At 25, it should not. But let's understand something here. So when you're pulled over, you could test negative but still be showing signs of impairment, right? So it's going to really depend on your involvement with that particular drug. So a frequent user may have a higher tolerance level, but in all means, within 2 to 3 hours after use, it should not be detectable at 25 nanograms. And that's why so two reasons. It shows most recent use at 25 because it's at a higher level, and it rules out the passive inhaling if you were at a party or an event where folks are smoking marijuana.
Bill, thanks for the call. 224 texted in, does the test differentiate between heroin and prescription Norco?
It's a morphine test. We are not looking for oxycodone and those types of drugs, so we are looking for heroin.
Let's go to Frank. You're on WGN. Frank, what was your question? Hi.
Hi, King John. Yeah, hi, King John. I'd like to ask the guest there if the unit displays just an idiot light on or off. How many digits does it do the calculation in, and does it round up and down or not? Because other devices the police use that were not three or more digits have been ruled unconstitutional.
You got a response to that?
So I'm not exactly sure what he's referring to as digits. So this doesn't operate like a breathalyzer. They're far more accurate than a breathalyzer with saliva testing for drugs. This is giving you a qualitative result as opposed to a quantitative where you would see a number. So this is basically going to be telling you you're positive or negative for that specific drug class.
So but say, what was the milligrams? Or
25 nanograms.
25 nanograms. So I guess the question is, on that 25th nanogram, how accurate is that? Are you rounding up from 24.9 to 25?
At 25 nanograms, it's going to detect it and read out as a positive, and we're greater than 90% accurate.
Thanks for the phone call. One more, and then we're done. Denise, you're on WGN. Hi, Denise.
At 25 nanograms.
Hey, Denise. Denise has got a radio on, but she doesn't have her phone next to her face. Denise, thanks for the call. Look at this. Lots of texts about this. And I think that these are questions that are good, that people are interested in, and understandably so. They want to know what their interaction is going to be like with the police. So I think part of the sort of Q&A in this state and in this town is going to be not just with you, Abbott Labs, how does the device work, but then it's going to be between us and the prosecutors and the police officers. How do you use this device? One last thing. Sales good? How's it going?
We're busy as heck. Between the U.S. and Canada, we're very busy right now. As you know, with the legalization of recreational use of marijuana, there's a lot of interest in Sotoxa.
Fred DeFino from Abbott Labs. Thanks for coming into our studio today.
Appreciate the time. Thank you.
Sotoxa. It's 229. The news is next.
Ooh, girl, need to kick off your shoes. Gotta take a deep breath. Time to focus on you. All the big fights, long nights that you've been through. I got a bottle of tequila I've been saving for you.
Thank God. Is he better? No.
Thank you, Steve Bertrand. 236. What are we listening to, Producer Ella?
Lizzo's Good As Hell is experiencing a renaissance with the weekend release of a remix version featuring pop force Ariana Grande.
So this is Lizzo with Ariana Grande now. Is this a new song or an old song they've redone?
Old song they've redone with, as we all know, pop queen, princess, whatever you want to call her, Ariana Grande.
Lizzo's good. She is fun, isn't she?
She is.
You're a fan, right?
Yes.
So is this tearing up the charts right now? What's the name of this song?
Good As Hell.
Good As Hell. It's 2:37 on WGN after the news. Elif usually checks in on the music world, tells us something you might have missed that maybe you should know about. Lots of texts and calls about that Sotoxa device. You haven't heard the last of that. John, what about poppy seeds? Poppy seed bagels can throw a false positive with your guest test. Yeah, if I'm Abbott Labs, I make that device. I sell it to police departments, and it makes it easier for them to test on the street. I think the controversy isn't going to be with the device or Abbott. It's going to be with what the judges, juries, and prosecutors do with that information. You may say I had THC in my system. The Tribune article was about this. So I tested positive for marijuana. Was I impaired or not? What's the level? And according to the article in the Tribune, there's no federal standard about that. So I know, you know, Colorado and other states have dealt with this. We're going to get our turn, though, and it's not exactly smooth sailing. Hey, we are going to do our Monday Chicago quiz. Our Monday Chicago quiz. It's sponsored by Mega Pros, making it fun to get things done. You are listening to WGN in Chicago. Do you live in or around the city? I don't care where you are. Call right now, 312-981-7200, and take our Chicago quiz. You get an assist from Steve Bertrand. Lauren Lapka, will you be a lifeline for these people?
I'll certainly try to be.
Okay. The category this time, last time was Chicago Roads, which was in your wheelhouse. This one is Chicago in TV, Chicago in television shows. 312-981-7200. Call or text right now. I have 10 questions. Let's see how well you do.
Well, Laverne and Shirley, that'll be one of the answers, I'm sure.
Steve, that's Milwaukee, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, I'm here to help.
So, use Steve accordingly. You might not pick Bertrand as your lifeline. I see Kevin just stepped out of the sports box, so maybe he's... You get two assists, let's say. One from Steve Bertrand, one from Lauren Lapka, and the category is Chicago in television. Elif, you ready with the open in 3, 2, 1, woof.
Come back to Chicago.
To Chicago.
Chicago.
Drove to Chicago.
In Chicago.
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 Shy City.
Coming home again.
Okay, here we go. Lee's going to play. Hi, Lee. You're on WGN Radio. How are you? Where are you calling from, Lee?
I'm calling from Portage, Michigan, and we know you from the cruise to Normandy.
Holy cow, you were with us on the cruise to Normandy. Wait, Lee, what's your last name, or who were you with us on the trip?
I was with Jeff.
Oh, sure. How are you?
Good, good.
Wasn't that a great trip?
Oh, it was awesome. It was absolutely awesome.
Are you going to go with us and Kelly Cruises next year to the Greek Isles and the Dalmatian coast?
Yeah, we're thinking about it.
Yeah, think about it. It's a little pricier. It's all-inclusive, and it really is going to be spectacular. But
Kelly Cruises were amazing.
Yeah, they really were. Okay, you ready? I've got, let's see how many you can get through. If you get them all right, okay. We'll invite you back as our reigning champion. Question number one. This is an American sitcom television series starring Jim Belushi in the title role as a suburban father of three children and then five children. It ran on ABC October 3rd, 2001 to June of 2009. What's the Jim Belushi series set in Chicago?
Just thinking.
You can reach out to Elif, Lauren Lafco, or Steve Bertrand for a lifeline if you're not sure.
Steve Bertrand.
Hey, Bertrand, what was the Jim Belushi show?
I think it might have been something like, What About Jim? But I'm not, I don't have a high degree of confidence.
You want to go with that?
Oh, sure, why not?
Better than what you got. According to Jim
according
is the correct answer. I'm going to give you a yes on that, just to keep things moving. Are you ready?
Okay, good.
Number two, this is an American sitcom produced by MTM Enterprises. It aired on CBS from 1972 to 1978. They did 142 episodes over six seasons. It stars a man who played a psychologist whose interactions with his wife and friends and patients led to humorous situations. It was filmed before a live audience.
Bob Newhart show?
Ding, 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 ding.
I thought you were going to give the plot series for every episode there.
I was going to say, Bob Newhart stores the weight. I can't say
right.
that. Number three, this series premiered on NBC. It followed firefighters and paramedics working at Firehouse 51 of the Chicago Fire Department on February 26, 2019. So February of this year, NBC renewed the series for an eighth season. What's the series about a Chicago fire department?
Chicago Fire.
Correct! Holy cow! How did you know? Here's the next one. This is an American medical drama TV series created by David E. Kelly on CBS. It ran from 1994 to 2000. It was set in a fictional private charity hospital in Chicago, Illinois, starring Mark Harmon, Christine Lottie, Mandy Patinkin. What was the name of that show?
Can I have a lifeline?
Yep. Bertrand just cleared his throat.
Okay.
I'm going to say Chicago Hope.
He says Chicago Hope.
I agree.
Chicago Hope is correct. You can't go to Bertrand anymore. Number five. This show is an American medical drama.
Oh, I got this one.
Created by Michael Crichton on NBC, 1994 to 2009. 331 episodes, 15 seasons. It was set in the emergency room of a fictional county general hospital. 23 Emmy Awards. What was the show?
ER.
Ding, ding, ding. Two more. You ready? This is an American television sitcom on ABC, 1989 to 1997. It was a spinoff of Perfect Strangers. The series revolves around the Winslow family, a middle-class African-American family living in Chicago. It starred, among others, the nerdy Steve Urkel, Jaleel White. Urkel was on what show?
I can see it, but I can't remember it.
Lauren Lafco, you want to give her a hand on this?
Different Strokes.
Family Matters.
Oh, Family Matters.
Or Different Strokes. Which one do you think?
I think it's Different Strokes.
She says Different Strokes. The correct answer is Family Matters.
Oh.
Oh, there we go. Producer Elif, go.
Did I do that?
Well done. Not too bad. You got 6 out of 7. I appreciate your phone call.
Okay, thanks very much.
Hey, Lee, hold the line, by the way. By the way, Elif, that's you up. Hold the line. Talk to producer Elif. She has for you from our friends at MegaPros, one of their fancy sweatshirts. So carry that about as you're raking the leaves this fall. Thank you, MegaPros, for sponsoring our Chicago quiz. I'll give you one more. Lauren Lapka, see if you know this one. An American legal and political drama, CBS, 2009 to 2016, focusing on Alicia Florek, the wife of Cook County State's attorney, who returns to her career in law after a public sex scandal and corruption scandal involving her husband.
Is that Madam Secretary?
Juliana Margulies, Josh Charles, Christine Baranski, Archie Punjabi. It was The Good Wife.
The Good Wife. Oh, I always confuse those two.
Nicely done. President was in town. You probably heard about that, speaking to an international convention of police chiefs. He wasted no time putting down Chief Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson. And he also referenced the fact that he doesn't know why Chicago, with its sanctuary status, and Illinois with its sanctuary status, he spent a lot of time drilling down on that. And he said he doesn't know why we do it, because it gets in the way of law enforcement. And he said, as a result of that, we are not availing ourselves of millions of dollars of funding that could come to us from the U.S. military. If the United States military isn't using some of their equipment or their resources, the administration is making it available to some cities and states. This is my understanding, but Chicago and Illinois aren't taking advantage of it. Kwame Raoul, our attorney general, is on the phone line. Kwame, it's John. You're on WGN. How are you today?
Doing wonderful. How are you?
Pretty good. Am I right about that? That's my recollection of sort of the backstory to this. Is that what's going on here?
Yeah, I guess that's what he's asserting. You know, the reality is that we have something called the Trust Act in Illinois, which I voted for when I was in the General Assembly, that says, you know, we are not going to utilize our law enforcement officials across the state to detain people solely on their immigration status. One of the things that President Trump was asserting that is that it puts us at risk, and something that he's alleged is that, you know, the fact that somebody's an undocumented immigrant makes them more likely to be a gang member or something of that nature, which is wholly untrue. And he has tried to manipulate municipalities and states who have embraced sort of this sanctuary posture by withholding funds. I've had to sue them. My predecessor sued the federal government for the release of JAG's funding, and the courts have supported our position each time.
He mentioned $600 million in military surplus equipment that would go to police departments. He said the previous administration didn't release it, but they could have, and that Chicago and Illinois, it sounds like, would not be receptive to it. Is it your understanding that we wouldn't be able to participate in that program as long as we are sanctuary status?
Well, I think what he's done is try to, there is burn JAG funding that he's tried to withhold, and we've sued them again twice to make certain that we're entitled, that he can, the federal government cannot withhold that based on our policy. I might add that additionally, President Trump has diverted money from the military and other places to invest in his border wall that he's so obsessed with. That's money that could be going both towards our military as well as through to law enforcement throughout the country.
Well, Kwame, what is the status of those suits? Are they in play or have they been resolved? Do we get that money from the federal government or not?
We do. We do get the JAG funding. Yeah. The courts have ruled in our favor.
You know, we spoke to the new officer or agent that's in charge of the Midwest on ICE. Seemed like a nice fella. And when the president talked about it, it seems like they do make pretty good arguments for cooperating with federal agencies when we have somebody who is an illegal alien in our custody. What's the problem with being more cooperative, with turning these people over to federal authorities?
If there is somebody who's committed a crime, who puts the public at risk, our law enforcement officers, whether or not the federal government is in touch with us, would respond accordingly to protect the public. The state of Illinois, the city of Chicago, has made a policy decision that we're not going to use our limited law enforcement resources to do the work of the federal government.
Well, isn't that... I don't exactly understand that either. I mean, if you have somebody in custody and you know that they're not properly documented here, shouldn't you alert the federal government or ICE about that person, or not?
Again, it is there are a lot of people that who are asylum seekers who we don't know all the specifics of their case or their circumstances. It is not, you know, our jails and our prisons are already overcrowded. We're not going to use our limited state resources to do the work of the federal government, particularly where we've seen a sort of discriminatory posture exercised by the federal government with regards to immigrants expressing preference. I'm the son of Haitian immigrants. The president said maybe a year and a half ago that, you know, the land that my parents came from is an S-hole. Meanwhile, he's saying that there should be a preferential policy towards immigrants from Norway and Finland. That's a racist immigration enforcement approach. We don't embrace that in the state of Illinois, nor should we.
I don't suppose you were at the president's event today at McCormick Place, huh?
No.
Do you have any comment? Eddie Johnson spoke about this earlier, about his decision not to attend. I mean, that was an International Association of Police Chiefs. It's in our city, and the police are protecting the president. Should Eddie Johnson have been there?
I think that substantive meetings of the police chief, Eddie Johnson, should partake in that. With regards to a president's speech, which I watched, I didn't think that offered anything in terms of instruction of how to be a police chief.
I understand that.
I don't think Eddie Johnson missed much at all.
and finally, to our listeners, though, who would like to see more cooperation between county, state, or city police and the federal government and ICE agents, give me your best case for why they don't more, or for us being a sanctuary city or state?
Well, first of all, it's the law in the state of Illinois. It's called the Trust Act, that we should not detain people solely based on their immigration status. And again, that does not mean, so what the president was trying to insinuate is that this puts the public at risk, public safety at risk. If there's any indication that somebody's committed a crime or about to commit a crime, like a law enforcement would do for any citizen, they can detain that individual.
Nice to talk to you today, Kwame. I appreciate your visiting with us on the radio. Come by our studio sometime. I don't think we've visited since you got elected, but we'd love to have you in our studio as well.
Love to do it.
Kwame Rawls, the Attorney General.